What an introduction.
First, recover your faith. Well, that leads me directly to my point. I should say that the first time I ever addressed the Philadelphia Society was in 1968 on a panel together with Ed Fulner and Mike Yeoman. It's been that long. I addressed it once, a couple of times since, once in the 1970s, another time in the 1990s, so I'm due. The references to barbarians struck me because I raised five children, none of whom were barbarians when they left my house, but all of whom, have come under the influence of the culture to some extent. And that, of course, is the problem which leads to Bob Riley's conclusion. First, recover your faith. First, guard your own civilization. Our practical problem is that we are conceiving of defending our civilization precisely in the wrong terms, in non-civilizational terms, in terms of a political action unguided by our own understanding of civilization, and therefore action that that is sometimes insufficient and sometimes excessive, always misguided. Now, what I'm going to do here today, following Bob Schrodinger's point that you ought to speak only if you have something to say, is to read to you, and I beg you to bear with me, a whole bunch of things from folks who are much more consequential than I. I'm going to read to you what some of our founders thought about America's role in the world, and then I will transition to what 20th century statesmen have thought our role with regard to the world's civilization should be. I will then offer some final remarks, and I hope that they won't. I hope that the point will have been made by what I'm going to read to you. So again, I'm not accustomed to giving up an opportunity to give my own views, but I think these views here are far more interesting. First on deck is John Winthrop, speaking on the good ship Arabella in Boston Harbor in 1630, before the founding of Boston, the city colony of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. The Lord will be our God and delight to dwell among us as his own people, and will command a blessing upon us in all our ways, so that we shall see much more of his wisdom and power and goodness and truth than formerly we have been acquainted with. We shall find that the God of Israel is among us, when 10 of us shall be able to resist 1,000 of our enemies, when he shall make us a praise and glory that men shall say of succeeding plantations, "The Lord make it like that of New England." For we must consider that we shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us, so that if we shall deal falsely with our God in his work we have undertaken, and so cause him to withdraw his present help from us, we shall be made a story and a byword throughout the world. We shall open the mouths of enemies to speak evil of the ways of God and of all professors for God's sake. We shall shame the faces of many of God's worthy servants, and cause their prayers to be turned into curses upon us, till we be consumed out of the good land whither we are going. And to shut up this discourse with that exhortation of Moses, that faithful servant of the Lord, in his last farewell address to Israel, Deuteronomy 30. Beloved, there is now set before us a life and good, death and evil, in that we commanded this day to love the Lord our God, and to love one another, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments and his ordinances and his laws, and the articles of our covenant with him, that we may live and be multiplied, and that the Lord our God may bless us in the land, whether we go to possess it. But if our hearts shall turn away, etc., etc., you know the rest. This has become the prototype of American political speech. The Lord has given us Americans unique blessings. We have crossed the seas, well, some of us actually have, all of our ancestors certainly did, to a land of unique blessings. We have, along with these blessings, we have been given commandments. And if we follow these commandments, the world will look upon us and will imitate us, or at least it should. But if it doesn't, it's its own problem. But what we are to do, of course, is to look after our own virtue. This is a very, very, very important point. I now turn to George Washington in his well-known circular to the states, 1783. Such is our situation, and such are our purposes. But notwithstanding the cup of blessing is thus reached out to us, notwithstanding happiness is ours, if we have a disposition to seize the occasion and make it our own, yet it appears to me that there is an option still left to the United States of America, that it is in their choice and depends upon their conduct whether they will be respectable and prosperous or contemptible and miserable as a nation. This is the time of their political probation. This is the moment when the eyes of the whole world are turned upon them. This is the moment to establish or ruin their national character forever. This is the favorable moment to give such a tone to our federal government that will enable it to answer the ends of its institution. Or this may be the ill-fated moment for relaxing the powers of the Union, annihilating, cementing the Confederation, etc., 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 etc. And he ends this particular thought. According to what we do, according to the system of policy the state shall adopt at this moment, they will stand or fall, and by their confirmation or lapse, it is yet to be decided whether the revolution must ultimately be considered as a blessing or a curse, a blessing or a curse, not to the present age alone, for with our fate will the destiny of unborn millions be involved. Now, George Washington, again, this is his first inaugural. He starts out by saying that the Constitution bids him to make recommendations to the people. He says, but it's far better for me, far more congenial with the feelings which actuate me, to substitute in place of a recommendation of particular measures the tribute that is due to the talents, the rectitude, and the patriotism which adorn the characters selected to devise and adopt them. In these honorable qualifications, I behold the surest pledges that, as on one side, no local prejudices or attachments, no separate views nor party animosities will misdirect the comprehensive and equal eye which ought to watch over this great assemblage of communities and interests, so on another, that the foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality, and the preeminence of a free government be exemplified by all the attributes which can win the affections of its citizens and command the respect of the world. And he points out that heaven itself seems to have ordained since the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty and the destiny of the Republican model of government are justly considered as deeply, perhaps as finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people. George Washington again, his farewell address. Observe good faith and justice toward all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony with all. Religion and morality enjoin this conduct. And can it be that good policy does not equally enjoin it? It will be worthy of a free, enlightened, and at no distant period a great nation to give to mankind the magnanimous and too novel experience of a people always guided by an exalted justice and benevolent. Can it be that Providence has not connected the permanent felicity of a nation with its virtue? The experiment, at least, is recommended by every sentiment which ennobles human nature. Alas, Is it rendered impossible by his vices? And then Europe has a set of primary interests, which to us have none or very remote relation. Hence, she must be engaged in frequent controversies, the cause of which are essentially foreign to our concerns. Hence, therefore, it must be unwise in us to implicate ourselves by artificial ties in the ordinary vicissitudes of her politics or the ordinary combinations and collisions of her friendship or enmities. What does this have to do with spreading our civilization? Well, it has to, we spread it quite simply by example. That is the point. And now to John Quincy Adams in his famous 4th of July address. And now, my friends and countrymen, if the wise and learned philosophers of the elder world, i.e. Europe, the first observers of mutation and aberration, the discoverers of maddening ether and invisible planets, the inventors of Congreve rockets and shrapnel shells should find in their hearts disposed to inquire, what has America done for the benefit of mankind? Let our answer be this. America, with the same voice which spoke herself into existence as a nation, proclaimed to mankind the inextinguishable rights of human nature, the only lawful foundations of government. America, in the assembly of nations, since her admission among them, has invariably, though often fruitlessly, held forth to them the hand of honest friendship, of equal freedom, of generous reciprocity. She has uniformly spoken among them, though often to heedless and often to disdainful ears, the language of equal liberty, of equal justice, of equal rights. She has, in the lapse of nearly a half century, without a single exception, respected the independence of other nations, while asserting and maintaining her own, she has abstained from interference in the concerns of others. And then follows his famous passage, wherever the standard of freedom and independence has been or shall be unfurled, there will her heart and her benedictions and her prayers be. But she goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy. She is the well-wisher to the freedom and independence of all. She is the champion and vindicator only of her own. Why? Because, he explains, she well knows that by once enlisting under other banners than her own, were they even the banners of foreign independence, she would involve herself beyond the power of extrication in all the wars of interest and intrigue, of individual avarice, envy, and ambition, which assume the colors and usurp the standards of freedom. The point that underlies everything that this generation, these several generations, thought about our relationship with the world was their own lack of certainty, their own modest and realistic lack of certainty about the state of our own virtue. They did not take it for granted that we could do right by ourselves, never mind do right by the rest of the world. Ruling ourselves was going to be a very, very serious, chancy project. Ruling others, not only practically impossible, but also morally, not just problematic, but morally antagonistic to the very principles on which the country was founded, which is precisely that as a Declaration of Independence. Let me quote the Declaration to you just on that very point, because Bob mentioned Kagan's book, Dangerous Nation, and it makes a reference to the Declaration which I think is quite unwarranted. Here is what the Declaration has to say. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new governments, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Now, Robert Kagan's book, Dangerous Nation, Robert Kagan, who advises, I'm told, by the most authoritative New York Times, advises John McCain, wrote in Dangerous Nation that the Declaration of Independence is really, after all is said and done, a declaration of disempowerment of other nations to make their choices. That it sets up the American people as judges of whether, in fact, other governments are proper, and takes away from them from other peoples the right to determine what is best for them. Makes us the arbiters of their way of life. I suggest to you that this runs directly against the text of the Declaration, against the intention of those who wrote it, and that it is quite literally, practically, impossible and indeed ruinous to attempt, as John Quincy Adams so powerfully argued. Now let us turn to our own time. Here is Nicholas Murray Butler, first head of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. We Americans have a peculiar responsibility toward the political organization of the world. Whether we recognize it or not, we are universally looked to, if not to lead in this undertaking, or at least to contribute powerfully toward it. Our professions and our principles are in accord with the highest hopes of mankind. We owe it to ourselves and to our reputation and to our influence that we do not by our conduct belie these principles and those professions, that we do not permit selfish interest to stir up among us international strife and ill feeling, etc., etc. And now, what I think is really the most exciting text of all in this litany, Woodrow Wilson, a speech entitled "Militant Christianity," delivered to the YMCA, October 24th, 1914. I have no patience with a cloistered virtue that does not go out and seek its adversary. Ah, how tired I am of the men who are merely on the defensive, who hedge themselves in, who perhaps enlarge and hedge enough to incite, to include their little family circle and ward off all the evil influences of the world from that loved and hallowed group. How tired I am of the men whose virtue is selfish because it's merely self-protective. How much I wish that men by the 100,000 might volunteer to go out and seek an adversary and subdue him. There's an exquisite combination of contempt and hate that I have for a particular kind of person. That is the moral coward. I wish we could give all our cowards a perpetual vacation, etc. I wonder if we attach sufficient importance to Christianity as a mere instrumentality in the life of mankind. For one, I am not fond of thinking of Christianity as the means of saving individual souls. I have always been impatient of the processes and institutions which said that their purpose was to put every man in the way of developing his character. My advice is, do not think about your character. If you will think about what you ought to do for other people, your character will take care of itself. Character is a byproduct. And any man who devotes himself to his cultivation, in his own case, will become a selfish prig. I remember a classmate of mine saying, "Why, man, can't you let anything alone?" I said, "I let everything alone that you can show me is not itself moving in the wrong direction." Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. In another speech, Nicholas Murray Butler, by the way, this is to the Lake Mohawk Peace Conference, which brought together the best and the brightest of the age, and whose symbol read Pro Patria Per Concordiam Universalis, for the fatherland, for the sake of universal concord. Yeah. It's a rather conditional patriotism, isn't it? For the fatherland, insofar as we can work our will upon the world. He wrote that God himself has ordained us to be our brother's keepers. He must not have read Genesis very carefully, because it was Cain who uttered the words, "Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord was not indicting Cain for not having been his brother's keeper. He was indicting him for murder. Which leads us to...
Wrap up.
which leads me to wrap up with Riley's point that belief will always trump unbelief. We saw this. The most eloquent testimony I ever read of this, of course, was in Whitaker Chambers' witness. The problem that we face today is really no different intellectually and morally than the problem that Whitaker Chambers and his generation faced. It was nihilism then that led the likes of Whitaker Chambers to embrace communism. It is nihilism now that leads shop girls to embrace Islam. Not because of the attraction of Islam or the attraction of communism, but because of the repugnance of a civilization that dares not be itself. I suggest to you that we have excellent guidance from our founding generation. Be yourself, be who you're supposed to be, and the rest will take care of itself. Thank you.